This is Locked On Oilers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It is game day, the Oilers and the Flames, 8:30 p.m. from Rogers Place. Wow, that feels good to say that. Hi, everybody. Tom Gazzola from TSN 1260 with you for this special edition of Locked On Oilers. Here, July 28th, the Oilers and the Flames get set to go toe-to-toe in the lone exhibition game before the Oilers and Hawks qualifying round series. We have a tremendous show for you today. It is a crossover show. You're going to hear from myself and Jack Bushman from Locked On Blackhawks. We're going to tee up the Oilers and Blackhawks qualifying round series. But before we get to that, real quick, the Oilers and Flames will play tonight. You can watch that game on Sportsnet. You can tune into the Don Wheaton on White pre- and post-game show with myself, Connor Halley, Matt Cassian, and Hernan Salas. Starts at 7 p.m. on TSN 1260. So we're going to see both goalies from the Flames tonight. Not sure what we're going to see from the Oilers, if Dave Tippett will play both guys. I'm assuming he will. It would be the smart and logical way to go about things, considering he has said that both guys are expected to play in the series against Chicago. Here's what we're anticipating for the lineup. McDavid with Nugent Hopkins and Cassian. Draisaitl with Ennis and Yamamoto. Haas with Athanasiou and Archibald. Jujhar Khaira with James Neal and Alex Chiasson, and then Joachim Nygaard will be the 13th forward because the teams are allowed to dress one extra forward and one extra defenseman for this game. No Riley Sheahan. He was banged up a little bit on Saturday during the Colby Cave Memorial Fund scrimmage, and we'll see if he's good to go by this Saturday against the Blackhawks. On defense, Nurse, Bear, Klefbom, Larson, Russell, and Benning, with Caleb Jones as the seventh D-man. So we'll see how Dave Tippett rolls out his lines. I'm assuming he wants to give everybody equal chance, equal time on ice. Obviously, where we're going to see some fluctuations is with special teams, guys killing penalties, guys on the power play and whatnot. But in general, I'm assuming he's going to roll four lines with that extra forward, roll three defensive pairs with that extra defenseman rotated in. And then I'm assuming, again, Coach Tom says both goalies play tonight. We shall see. Very excited to get going. And without further ado, let's go into it. Our crossover episode, myself and Jack Bushman from Locked On Blackhawks.
So, Tom, I listened into Locked On NHL last week, and I heard you've now been at the rink in Edmonton for over a week. How's everything looking up there, and how are the players handling the bubble so far? What's the mood like and everything?
It seems like the bubble is being well received. You know, the players have their creature features. The ice district here in Edmonton is second to none. Jack, it's really nice. And the weather has been good. So we've seen some videos and Instagram stories from guys hanging out, getting some sun before they have to go to the rink. The rink itself, I know we had the flood damage at the end of the Winter Garden, or Ford Hall, as it's called in Edmonton. It's basically a huge pedestrian bridge that, you know, thousands of people cross to go over a main thoroughfare in Edmonton's downtown. Mm-hmm. And where the main flooding was at the entrance across the street from the main rink. So the rink itself is generally okay. There was some flooding in the areas that you'd call the production areas, where the command center of the building is. And so they had to replace some equipment and wiring there, but everything's good to go. The images I've seen from inside the main rink are fantastic. We were at the downtown community arena, which is attached to Rogers Place, and it's basically the practice rink, and everything there was fine, pristine, and it looks like Edmonton is ready, willing, and able to host, and this thing is off and running right away here.
Well, that's definitely awesome to hear, especially after seeing that crazy video that kind of leaked on social media, the flooding in Rogers Place. I saw it, and I was like, man, they're going to play hockey here in 2 weeks.
I know. You know what? And that's the thing. It was at a completely different end of the building, technically part of the same building, but they sent in a small army of people to fix it all up, and sounds like we're good to go.
All right, well, that's definitely terrific to hear. And overall, I mean, I'm not sure if you've had any interactions with any players or teams or anything, but do the players seem like they're happy to be there, like everything's going well, they're enjoying their time for, you know, what it is, it's quarantine, making the most of their opportunity at least?
Yeah, you know what? They seem to get it. And nobody seems to be down. Nobody seems to be begrudgingly rejoining their team. Mike Green is the only Oiler that opted out, mm-hmm. and he's got you know, personal reasons and family reasons not to be here. And that's totally within his right. Nobody's going to knock him for
Absolutely.
That. And it just creates opportunity for other guys, Jack. So the guys, the best way to describe the way the Oilers have handled this and talking to the players in the Zoom calls that we do at every practice, businesslike. That's probably the best way to describe the Oilers in these past 2 weeks. Very businesslike and focused. And I'm sure that the Blackhawks have been the same way.
Yeah, sounds like everyone's trying to kind of just get their focus back and back on a mission almost, as we were without hockey for about 5 months there. But all of a sudden, just like that, here are the playoffs, and you got to be ready to go come Saturday for game one, definitely. It's going to be interesting.
Oh, man, it's coming fast. And, you know, we're going to get an onslaught of hockey, Jack. And that's kind of what excites me the most. Like, it's not just our respective teams that we cover and do podcasts for, but it's the 24 out of 31 teams.
I know.
And it's just going to be a flood. So I'm ready for my head to be spinning for the next couple months. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's going to be basically March Madness style hockey starting at like 11 a.m. in some places and ending at like midnight. I'm excited to basically lock myself in a cave for 12 hours and just go nuts watching hockey and some golf this weekend. So that's basically what I got on my schedule all weekend. But now to get into the swing of things here a little bit. Tom, as I said, it's been almost five whole months since these teams have seen game action. You want to remind us just how the Oilers were doing a little bit down the stretch before the regular season was placed on pause back on March 11th?
Well, one of the Oilers lost three of their last four games heading into the pause, which is, you know, not a great thing, but they were in the stretch drive and generally playing pretty well. And one of those losses came to the Blackhawks, and I'm sure you noted it. The Hawks won the season series. Both of those games back at United Center, and the Oilers were dealing with a bit of injury issues, and they were trying to get their stride going, but it seemed like everything was starting to take shape. You know, the new guys that came on at the deadline, Mike Green was banged up. He was out for a while, only played two games with the Oilers. We're not going to see him in the return to play. Tyler Ennis was kind of finding his groove with the club after coming over from Ottawa, and Andreas Athanasiou was another one. That really, you know, struggled to get anything going. He had a goal and an assist in his games with the Oilers since coming over from the Red Wings. But it seemed like the team was kind of finding a way to gel a bit. And abruptly, everything came to a crashing halt, obviously. And here we are now. Everyone's happy, healthy, and ready to go. This Oilers team, I think the players, the Draisaitls and McDavids and Nugent Hopkins of the world, are determined to prove to the rest of the National Hockey League that they're just not only good and exceptional regular season players, Jack, but they could do it when the chips are on the line and down. And they want to prove to everyone they could be winners in the postseason as well.
It's about time for that team to kind of make those next steps at this point. We know we've seen McDavid and Draisaitl light it up points-wise in the regular season the last couple of years. But I think, I mean, I can't speak for the fans in Edmonton, but I'm sure they're probably ready to see those guys kind of make the next step in the postseason. And it's tough to hear that. It sounds like they were really just starting to kind of gel together when the season was unfortunately paused on March 11th. I also found it interesting that Edmonton, I didn't know this actually, Edmonton technically has more points than the Stars this year, but because the Stars played in two fewer games in the regular season than the Oilers, they landed the four seed actually. I found that kind of interesting. I didn't think Edmonton actually had the Stars beat points wise this year.
Yeah, it's, you know what? Everything's kind of jumbled up, and it is what it is. Edmonton comes in as the five seed. They get the 12th seed Hawks, and, you know, they're just, that's the hand that they've been dealt. You got to roll with it.
Yeah, that's an interesting situation there for Edmonton. As for the Blackhawks, to kind of recap on them down the stretch, they finished the regular season 32-30-8, winning five of their final eight games of the regular season with some impressive wins over the Tampa Bay Lightning. And as we just mentioned, they did defeat the Edmonton Oilers 4-3 at the United Center. And two of the three Hawks losses were close games against the defending Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues. So the Hawks were gaining a little bit of confidence down the stretch themselves as well. And I think that's, you know, why the NHL made sure to include them in their postseason, because although the Hawks' chances of actually making it were really low, that doesn't mean it wouldn't have happened. So I am personally happy with the league's ruling of electing 24 teams to make the postseason. I'm curious, Tom, what's your thought on 24 teams making the postseason this year?
We knew that this was going to be unprecedented. And, you know, we heard all the rumors, Jack, all along. You know, how many teams come back? Do you go right into the playoffs? Do you finish up a part of the regular season? What's the right way to do it? How do you do it with as much integrity as possible? And when you hear that seven teams are out, they basically took care of all the teams that you knew were gone and had no hope of playing in the postseason. And yes, there's some fringe teams like the Blackhawks. We know that the Rangers were kind of coming on. Yeah, Montreal Canadiens. Like, that's fine. And you want as many people watching these games as possible. The NHL is a business. They need to recoup as much as the potential $1.1 billion in revenue that would have been lost had they not played. And here you also instill a little bit of hope, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that. The 10 games to 12 games of a season is a good chunk of a season.
Definitely. And
who knows? What if the Hawks stayed hot, Jack? And what if they did make a push for one of those wild card spots? It wasn't out of the realm of possibilities. So I like the 24 teams.
Yeah, I agree. I just think, there, like you said, 12 games, that's a significant chunk of the season. People don't really realize how fast, you know, those 10 games and 12 games go, but that's really a major point of the season. So I think you can't really just throw teams out because they weren't in that position yet. There's still a significant chunk of games to play. So I do agree with you. I think it was the right decision. And although I am a Blackhawks fan, I do think it was right to give them the disadvantages in the postseason. Like, they'll be up against the highest seed if they do somehow upset the Oilers in the first round. Like, no matter what, they'll be versing the higher seeds. So it's not like the NHL's throwing them in there and they have the same kind of – I mean, they do have the same chances as other teams, but they're getting – the respect that a 23rd seed should get, which is what I like. So I feel they did a good job in putting the teams that were doing well in the regular season at where they left off. They're giving them the byes. The four seeds get the byes, and they're making it harder on the lower seeds. So overall, I can't really complain about what the NHL's done in their return to play plan, especially when you look around the rest of the major sports in North America right now, and we can't really say the same.
Jack, I think we're going to see a couple of Cinderella stories in this qualifying round and in the playoffs. I really do, because it's wide open. I truly believe that, hey, if the Hawks get hot, if their young guns step up to the plate and help out Taves and Kane and Keith, who knows?
It's a toss-up right now. And, like, I was, you know, looking at all the teams in there. I'm like, man, Boston, Tampa, St. Louis, those teams are loaded, but they haven't had the chemistry that they were rolling with in 5 months. Like, they're fresh on the ice again. So it's like a completely different season right now. It's like we're getting, I don't even know, a huge, huge kind of intermission in the middle. I don't think teams are going to be able to roll over with the same momentum they had in the first half. So, like you said, I think it's going to be anyone's game, and we could see a team like, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers or someone out, just some random team get hot out of nowhere that we know can put it together. It's going to be really interesting, but I think that's what's going to make it the most fun, is every team's fan base knows they have a chance because no one really has that much of an advantage right now.
No, my sleeper teams, I'll be honest with you, I think Carolina could do some damage.
Definitely.
Let's see what happens with their goaltending. And in the West, Vancouver. Vancouver, dude, for whatever reason, I just kind of like their mix.
They have some talent up there, lots of young talent. Their future is going to be very bright if they are able to figure out some cap problems. They pay their fourth liners like $10 million. It's absurd. But they have so much young talent. And if Jacob Markstrom can do well in net, they have a chance to go far. They're one of those teams that definitely – they have the offense to do it. Some young guys, Brock Besser, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson's absolutely filthy. So definitely a team that if they're able to get hot and – get a couple series wins, they could surprise a bunch of people that, you know, not a lot of people I would say right now are looking at Vancouver as a team that could, you know, make a serious run.
Oh, totally. Here's the other thing too, bringing it back to the Hawks and the Oilers. Like, what are people thinking around Chicago when it comes to Corey Crawford? I know Colin Delia and Malcolm Subban weren't going to get you very far, but the whole Crawford situation, obviously with COVID, is tough. We saw that here with Caleb Jones, but is there a lot of confidence in Corey Crawford when they saw him back on the ice the other day for practice before the team left for Edmonton? Did that kind of give the Blackhawks faithful a renewed sense of hope?
So definitely Crawford being back just gives everyone such a better feeling about their chances, about the Hawks' chances of upsetting the Oilers, because Colin Delia, Malcolm Subban, that's not going to get it done against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. I don't care who you have in front of them. That's not really going to do it. But Corey Crawford, as you kind of expected, he was a little rusty in the team scrimmage on Saturday. He allowed, I think, 3 goals in the one period of play that he took part in. But kind of what you expect, hasn't seen NHL-level shots in a significant stretch of time. But he's sounding like, overall, as we just talked about, we know it wasn't an injury thing. It was a COVID thing. He tested positive for COVID-19, and he was absent for so long because he wanted to take the extra precautions and not get anyone sick. And just from his words, though, and we know it's not an injury, I'm pretty confident to say that Crawford's going to be in net for game one. As for how he plays, that could be a whole different story. We're gonna have to need him to be stellar, because that Blackhawks defense is not very strong in front of him, and that Oilers offense is one of the best in the entire NHL. So I think Crawford's going to have to be ready to go right from the bat, and if he's not, this series could get ugly in a hurry, Tom.
When I look at the Blackhawks, Jack, I see the Taves, I see the Canes, I see the veterans that they have there. And listen, those guys are all world elite and have been for over a decade now. But if the Hawks are going to get the one up on the Oilers, I think, and I'm curious to watch Kirby Dach. I'm curious to see Alexander Nylander. I'm curious to see how Drake Caggiula rises to the occasion. He was good for the Oilers in the playoffs 3 seasons ago. He honestly was.
Wrecking ball.
Yeah, and Dylan Strobe. Like, these are the next wave of young, talented Blackhawks. And with this time off that they've had, I'm wondering if they mentally, physically, are able to put it together and kind of take the next step and surge against this Oilers team. Because if the Hawks win, I think that that combination of youngsters are going to have to play a huge role for this team.
They're definitely going to have to. Interesting that I saw on Twitter the other day, the Blackhawks actually have the youngest postseason roster out of all 24 teams. And the roster makeup is an interesting mix of all these young guys, as well as some of the core pieces. We still have Taze, Kane, Duncan Keith, even though Brent Seabrook won't be playing, locker room presence potentially, Brandon Saad, Corey Crawford. So there's still guys that have been there and done that are going to have a strong influence over these young players. But we're exactly right. If the Blackhawks want to get the series victory, their young guys are going to have to step up. And one thing out of Blackhawks training camp that we've heard is everyone is juicing Kirby Dach right now. They're saying he's looking a lot bigger, stronger on the puck. He's been very, very good in practice. And he said himself that right when the pause happened, he hit the weight room to get stronger. So I'm really, really excited to see how Kirby Dach fares now that he's kind of had this pause and see how much better he got because of this. And I think the other big test that the Blackhawks are going to have to see is Duncan Keith's going to be playing with 19-year-old Adam Boqvist most of the time. He's going to be playing probably 18 to 20 minutes a game. I don't know if he's ready to play 18 to 20 minutes a game against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. That's my concern right now, Tom.
Well, you know, the Oilers are probably looking at that and they're going, who can we expose on that back end? And although Boqvist has like a really high potential as a player and defenseman in the National Hockey League, when you don't have the history or the experience of an NHL postseason, that can go south on you in a hurry. And we'll see if the Oilers are able to key on a guy like that, because it's a game of strategy. The better strategists generally win in the postseason. And if you can outmaneuver your opposition and expose their weaknesses and exploit them fully, generally that's the team that walks away victorious.
Definitely. And I think that will take us to an interesting point that I want to talk about, exposing weaknesses. One of the biggest weaknesses the Blackhawks had this season was in the special teams department. They were pretty strong on the penalty kill. They were top 10 this year, but on the power play, 28th in the NHL, at under 13%. The only teams that were worse than them were the Detroit Red Wings, Ottawa Senators, and Anaheim Ducks. Not exactly elite company. And as I've talked about recently on the podcast, the Oilers had the best man advantage in the NHL by a wide margin this year. It wasn't even really close. So I think a big part of the series, Tom, is going to come down to the special teams battle. What have we seen from the Oilers in practice so far as for their power play lines and whatnot? And what do you expect from the Oilers special teams-wise coming up in the series?
First and foremost, Jack, I don't expect to see power play 2 get on the ice very much. It'll be power play 1 for a good minute 45, like is the norm with this club. And how can you fault the Oilers for not rolling out Drysdale, McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, Klefbom on the point, either James Neal down low or Alex Chiasson down low, Kyle Yamamoto gets out there. It's a deadly combination.
It's lethal.
So
it's lethal.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, and that group deserves the accolades that it does, because it was at or near the top of the power play standings all season long for a good reason. And it deserved all that attention, absolutely. But the Oilers' penalty kill was actually top five all season as well. Mm-hmm. That was a major hole for the Oilers, you know, basically for the last 10 to 15 years. Was the penalty killing was perennially awful, Jack. And Dave Tippett came in, Jim Playfair came in, and they said, we need to cut down on our goals against. How do we do that? Well, look at the PK. It's been awful and horrendous here. Let's find a way to correct that. And they seem to have done that. So the Oilers' penalty kill deserves almost as much credit as the power play gets. And we'll see if that continues in the postseason. I think that'll be a big question mark for the Oilers, as will be the goaltending. We don't even know who's going to play a net for the Oilers. I think it'll be Mike Smith, but Mikko Koskinen has seen his fair share of games. Those two were basically 50-50 this season.
If they want to go the experience route, they definitely got to go Smith.
Yeah, but Smith, keep in mind, Smith got shelled against the Hawks in that March 5th game, got yanked after like a period, and Koskinen, you know, held the fort the rest of the way in a loss. And the Hawks won the season series in all three games. It was Mike Smith between the pipes.
Who do you think the team has more confidence in right now? Who do you think gets the start on Saturday?
I think Mike Smith does get the start, and I think that's because him and Dave Tippett go back so long. And in the big games this season, Jack, the very key and important games, Mike Smith has been the go-to guy, but I don't think he's got a long leash for sure. If he falters, or if the Oilers and the Brain Trust see something they don't like in Mike Smith's game, there will be no hesitation whatsoever to throw Mikko Koskinen in there.
We saw both of our teams getting active. You mentioned Edmonton got both Andreas Athanasiou and Mike Green from Detroit, and also Tyler Ennis from Ottawa. I kind of wanted to revisit those trades a little bit and talk about how Athanasiou and Ennis fit in the lineup going forward in their postseason run. As we know that Green, unfortunately, opted out before training camps opened up a few weeks ago due to family health concerns.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see Athanasiou and Ennis, and they should feel comfortable with this group, because it's not like they haven't been Oilers. They've been Oilers for a long time, technically. Yeah. It's just they haven't played
many games
with the Oilers. Yeah. We're going to see Tyler Ennis on the second line with Leon Draisaitl and Kyler Yamamoto, because Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has been bumped up to Connor
McDavid's
left wing.
That's interesting for sure.
Exactly.
That's interesting for sure.
And that's how the Oilers went into the pause with Nuge playing with McDavid and Cassian. And we kind of thought that Athanasiou would naturally slide into that second line left wing slot with Draisaitl and Yamamoto. And with Nugent Hopkins, by the way, that line was one of the most effective in the league. Yeah. But Ennis has been the better player at camp. Ennis has been more effective when the team has actually been playing. Athanasiou has struggled at times in camp and when the season was still going, to the point where they bumped him down to the third line with Riley Sheahan and Josh Archibald, and maybe they can insulate him a little bit, let him get his feet wet, get acclimated. He's a younger guy, whereas Ennis has been around the league a bit longer. And quite frankly, Jack, I'm not going to lie to you, Ennis was the better player at training camp in the scrimmages. The puck seemed to follow him wherever he went. And both scrimmages, he was on the losing team, but he was one of the guys you looked at and you're like, well, there's nothing wrong with his game. He's making things happen out there. So I'm curious to see how that line looks. It's two really small wingers with one really big centerman.
Yeah, definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah, and all of them can wheel and they can fly, and they all have skill. We'll see if the two flanks can buzz, and we'll see if the big brute down the middle can put his size and strength and skill on display, create space, and make the most of
his... He seems to every night.
exactly. So we'll see. It'll be an interesting combination, and then the McDavid line is just, I'll tell you this, Jack, Connor McDavid has had time to work out in the last 4 months, whereas last summer he was just getting that knee healed up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was a scary situation.
Oh, you know what's scary? How good he looks right now. And I've watched this kid over the last 5-6 years. It's incredible.
Nightmares.
Whole different level.
This defense is not ready. I know it. I'm not looking forward to it. It's going to be rough, man. That kid is something else.
That does it for this edition of Locked On Oilers. Hope you enjoyed the crossover edition of the show. We will hear more from Jack Bushman from Locked On Blackhawks as we move through the week and the series. Enjoy the Oilers and the Flames. And of course, be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NHL. Myself and Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres have got you covered every Friday.